to 3. He sat very low in the front seat of the Yaris, not because he was worried he would be recognized, but because caution and invisibility were words he lived by. The stolen car? No problem. As was his style, he had removed the nondescript subcompact late at night from the garage of an elderly person away on a long cruise. He laughed his gloating superior laugh, thinking about the stupidity of the masses. At how key codes made them feel safe and secure. How typical and how foolish. All he ever needed to do was find his mark, sit on her house for a few days before her trip, and use a long lens to watch her punch in the garage code. He always chose elderly widows because they lived alone, put very low mileage on their cars, and kept their cars well-maintained. If he didn't possess such a cautious nature, he believed he could simply trick most people into volunteering their key codes. Morons. He knew he was in almost no danger of being recognized because there were only 2 men in all of Paradise, and quite possibly the entire world, who might know his face. And those 2 were busy playing softball on the other side of town. He had made sure of that, as he had made sure that the mess he had left behind in Boston had yet to be discovered. That was what he did. He made sure of things, controlling as many factors in any given situation as he could. Until the unfortunate incidents in the wake of his crossing paths with Jesse Stone, his record of success had been impeccable. He had been able to kill with impunity, at will, and the way he most enjoyed it, slowly, tortuously, and profitably. But the 2 men at the softball field had taught him a valuable lesson about the limits of control. For that lesson, the little man, sitting low in the front seat of the stolen car, felt he had a debt to pay. He meant to pay it on his own terms, and in blood, their blood, and that of their loved ones. For now, he was playing a bit of cat and mouse with the Paradise PD by shooting out the tires of cars around town. Of course, he could easily have killed the chief or that idiot deputy of his at a distance, but where was the sport in that? Where was the pleasure in killing anonymously? He wanted them to know, as Gino Fish had known, who was doing this to them and why. He shook his head, upset that Fish had robbed him of his enjoyment the way he had. He wanted to see them helpless and begging, powerless to stop him from grinding their loved ones into dust as they watched. Although it was that Moose Simpson who had shot him, he would take his greatest delight in paying his debt to Jesse Stone. Stone had lied to him, and it was Stone who had toppled the first domino in his run of misfortune. If Stone hadn't stuck his nose in where it didn't belong, none of his other troubles would have followed. And Stone, like Fish, had called him Mr. Peepers, a name he detested beyond all reason. Only Stone had lived to tell the tale. Even now, long after his encounter with the chief, he felt fury welling up inside him, his cheeks flushing with rage. Reaching up, he readjusted the rearview mirror to see his reflection. The ashen skin and unremarkable features of his face turned an ugly shade of red beneath his wire-rimmed glasses. In spite of his rage, he had a measured respect for Stone. A host of agencies and organizations on both sides of the law had tried unsuccessfully to put an end to him. They might as well have tried to lasso a ghost or to capture shadows in a box. No one had ever seen him for who he was until it was too late. With Stone, it had been different. But some of the respect he had for the chief was diminishing by the day. He thought for sure that by now, Stone would have figured out the admittedly subtle message he had been leaving for him in the rear driver's side tires of used cars all over Paradise. He was about to leave another 2 hints. The street was quiet. Not a single car had driven past his location in 45 minutes, and not a soul had strolled along Scrimshaw Street in twice that amount of time. Dusk was deepening, and there were dark, threatening clouds in the sky. He sat up as tall as he could in the driver's seat and reached over to the passenger seat. He lifted the edge of a plaid blanket and folded it over on itself. On the seat beneath the blanket sat a handsome .22 pistol, the one he had waved at Gino Fish. He laced his fingers around the custom wood grip of the Smith & Wesson Model 41 and thought what he always thought at moments like these. A great artist uses great tools. And this gun was a work of art itself. Then he felt a twinge of pain in his shoulder, and the rage rose up in him again. There had been a time, not too long ago, he could have put a man's eye out from twice the distance he could now. But Luther Simpson had ruined that with a single lucky shot to his right shoulder. Swiveling his head, and using the car's mirrors, he took one last careful look at the street to make sure he wouldn't be spotted. It was safe. Turning in his seat, he raised his pistol up and rested the bottom of the grip in the niche of his bent left arm atop the door sill. He took aim and fired. The tire flattened in short order. He laid the pistol in his lap, started the car, and rolled farther up the street to repeat the process. With the last two hints left behind, he drove toward the turnpike. He made sure not to speed or do anything else that might bring undue attention to himself. If Stone didn't get the message by now, he would as soon as the bodies were discovered in Boston.